This is the ZMAR Podcast. Elite Benefits of America helps small and mid-sized companies with their health insurance programs. And now, your host, Butch ZMAR.
So in a recent conversation I was having, somebody asked what it was like to be in the military, and I thought it was an interesting question. It's not a common one, believe it or not, in most settings at least. I mean, maybe casually in certain settings that it may come up in a different way, but at least this question came out and made me start thinking about it leading into this podcast. And again, as I go through this, this is from the world of Butch ZMAR. This is not for all people and veterans or companies that I refer to in here. Everybody's a little bit different, and the veterans are going to be different. There's some common ground what I'll go through, but just in case you know other veterans or if veterans are listening to this, obviously every situation is a little bit different, but it varies, right? And so it just created a thought process to try to figure out how to articulate, because I was a little caught off guard about it. But, you know, most people that think of the military, they think of war vets with hand grenades and firearms and loaded with, you know, machine guns and, you know, a big old dagger on their thigh and all that other stuff. But most of the military is not in combat or not to that degree in combat. But we all play our own role, right? Even for myself, I never shot a firearm in the military or for the military, except for in boot camp. But even that, the Navy had rebuilt some of their boot camp, and this is back in the 90s, and they rebuilt this indoor firing range, but it was an electronic system. To my knowledge, it lasted 3 years. They tore it down, and they went back to the outdoor range. That was my extent. It looked and felt and even heavy like a M16, but it was not a real M16. It did not have any backfire or any bullets coming out of it. You literally had to look at the screen below you, next to you, kind of like electronic bowling, right? So you bowl and then you have to look at the screen to see which pins you got knocked down. It was kind of like something similar to that. And I've also never been in direct fire of anything. And I'm not saying that's downplaying or upplaying certain things. I'm just saying that the average military personnel are not in direct fire. They're just not. They support all those people that are out there. But our role is just as important as theirs is. And so, you know, just because I wasn't taking a bullet and somebody else was, doesn't make my job less or their job less. I'm just saying that maintenance and supply are a big key to the front lines, and there's a big role. All of it together has to work. Otherwise, people are missing things, and they do miss things, right? Supply doesn't get there in time. Short of supply, too much demand, not enough demand. All of this stuff takes into place, and you may or may not have what you want. But then, you know, one of those frontline military people, and it's actually in several books I read where some of them just go to an armory and say, I want this, 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 and this. And they modify it any way they want. And that excites them because they're the ones using it. So that's what supply and maintenance is for. And so they support all of them. And so just kind of sum things up with my perspective of the military. The military personnel can be placed in a box, right? So we are told to operate with inside a box. Really not told to think anything, just do your job, right? It's already spelled out. They know it. You know what you're supposed to do. You could deviate a little bit based on personality, depending on where you're at, because personalities and characters is what creates the whole team, right? So it's like sometimes you can't be in a spot without the logo on the front of the jersey, but you can't be in that spot without the names on the back of the jerseys. And so so it's the same thing in the military. So anybody could actually jump into your position and jump in and learn the job and do it just as well as you, because everything is cookie cutter in some degree. We're not taught to actually go outside the box. People could die. Things could happen, mishaps. There are some leaders that stand up and say, I'm going to make some change, but they're putting their necks out there and trying to make those changes to be better for the men and women that come after them. there's a lot of success in it. Obviously, we don't hear about it. Some of it can be top secret, but other parts, it's just because a lot of men and women that make these changes are humble, and so they don't want credit for it. They don't want recognition for it. They in their eyes, they just did their job. And like one example is on the F-14 Tomcat, that's the famous Top Gun fighter jet. We had a huge problem, and it was way before my time, that when an aircraft flies and lands on a flight deck of an aircraft carrier, there's this slamming and a jolting that occurs all at once. And so depending on how the hook gets hooked on the cable, because they're going full speed, and the reason they go full speed because the runway is short. If they're not going fast enough, they go right into the sea. And so they have to go fast, so in case they miss that tail hook onto the cable, that they can keep on going. And so they practice this as touch and goes when you're in the middle of the ocean, when they're trying to practice flight operations so they be mission ready. They'll touch and go, and it's just part of their operation procedures. And sometimes they'll land, they'll tail hook, and then they'll taxi back over to the catapult and take off right again. It's just part of their routine. So when they land on the flight deck, it slams. So sometimes if you hook it a certain way, it literally just it forces the nose back down and slams the front wheel down. And I'm not saying that's bad piloting. I have no idea. I just know that it happens. But even if they land perfectly and smooth in that direction, they're going, who knows, 200 miles an hour, and they're getting they got a cable that softens it. It's not like a brick wall, but still they're coming to a jolt of a stop. So inside the cockpit and other parts, circuit cards were being bounced out or out of place, and were called creating faults in their software or just how they operate. So they were pulling the box to send it to us, and literally all maintenance did was pound on the circuit cards, put them back in place, rebolt it back up, seal it back up, send it back out, and works fine. And so this one veteran made this material that was not flammable, but it's similar to the stuff that we know is great stuff that you can go to the hardware store and fill gaps and it hardens. I don't know anything in comparison. I just know that it was a non-flammable, non-electrocuting, whatever. There's all these tests that it had to go through, but they put a film of it on the inside of the cover and actually acts as a cushion. The reason they didn't use soft cushion to push them down is because of wear and tear. So they made something hard so that they had constant pressure on there. And I'm not sure why they went through all that, but I just know that's what they did. And so they saved the military millions of dollars. So there's outliers out there that think outside the box, and they did it for the greater good. And I think that happened like in the 70s or 80s. So you're talking about almost 30 years later, we were working on boxes that already had it, and it was still working like a charm. But the other thing about the box is about producing results every single time. It's not about putting people in boxes and being busy. And, you know, even though we do some of that, there's the military jokes about how many times you scrub a deck or strip and wax a deck. Or I know a friend of mine was saying that he was in the desert and he had to sweep the sidewalk, which the outside of the sidewalk was all sand and dirt, right? So he had to sweep the sidewalk that was going to get dirt on there anyways. But you know, some people will call that hazing. But anyhow, sometimes we do dumb stuff, but that's just part of discipline, following orders, listening to superiors, working as a team. There's a lot of things that go into it because you got to make sure that when you're in the heat of battle that everybody's on the same page. And that's why you go through some of that. Some people, yeah, nickname it hazing, but some people call it initiation in some degree. But, you know, it's just the way it works, and it's always been that way, and it creates a little bit of a bond between people and could boost morale in some cases. But it's all about producing results. So we put you and the personnel and military people inside of a box. They produce a certain results every single time. Leaders and rank and file are replaced when they don't have the results, and that happens too. Like, just because they were in the military doesn't mean that they follow orders well, and it doesn't mean that they're disciplined. We have the issues just like everybody else does. Just because we teach military bearing doesn't mean that it's received well. So like one example, there was a few guys we worked with, and when we wore dungarees, so they were basically jeans and a, you know, Dickies shirt, So we looked like we worked in a mechanic shop without the grease. They would sag their pants. And sure, they were told to pull their pants up, but like there's no military bearing in that. And there should have been discipline order on that, but I'm just saying they got away with it for a long time. Maybe somebody corrected at some point. I'm just saying that it happens, right? We're not perfect by any means. Just because you're in the military doesn't mean you have negative outliers. But, you know, these boxes are, you know, we produce results that are either set already in place, this is what the expectations are, or demanded by more senior leaders. And so more senior leaders may want to say, I want this result. Well, then the leadership at the lower level will execute with inside their box to make sure that happens. And it's all about 100% of the results. There is not about like, we're going to delay it the next year, or yeah, we're working on it, we just need more time. If there's a higher demand that says, we need to get this done and you have 24 hours, and even if you, there is no way you can get it in 24 hours, somehow you figure it out. And and obviously there's probably exception to the rules, but I'm telling you that in most cases, the demands that are put on are realistic. You just have to change your mindset and expectations yourself. And that's the biggest holdback, is the expectations that hold you back from producing those results, whether you're in the military or not. So the status quo is you do your job and you get the results, or the results will definitely be there if you just do your job. So what happens with most veterans, right? I can't speak for all, but what do they bring to the table? Discipline is one of the biggest things, right? Most veterans will ask for expectations and they will probably meet or exceed those because that's how we're driven. Most of them have to be provided marching order, though. So they'll get lost without a compass. So you, a lot of employers that may be listening to this and you hire a veteran, you just may have to give them a roadmap to work with, but they will execute it every single time. They will be loyal to you if you treat them with respect. We are not really taught in the military to be creative. We just are taught to follow orders. So sometimes we have to have that roadmap given by somebody else. And I always say that, you know, that the military teaches you to follow a process. They never teach us to actually create the process. And then there's a few outliers in the military, and I know a couple of them myself, where they develop new procedures and new processes for the military for the make it better for the men and women that follow behind them. So sometimes in the workplace, and I've seen this and personally have experienced this, that sometimes if you don't give even employees, but I'm just speaking military in general, if you don't give them marching orders or they're vague standards set forth by somebody else who actually, in my opinion, has never survived a battle in their life, you know, they might have challenges, but, you know, a lot of military veterans have probably went through some life-altering situation to some degree. And if you don't have that structure and order in the workplace, you're going to have disgruntled veterans. That's why some places actually don't like to have veterans in there, but it's probably because of the leadership inside that company is not creating a successful path for them. So some of the veterans will actually wave off this path because it's undesired. You know, they're trying to create some attention in some place, even in the workplace, and that creates some negativity at times. Some will try to tap in their own creativity and start doing things, but this creates problems in the workplace because you were thinking for yourself. And they don't like that. And the problem is they don't give you a standard to work with. And I'm going to get to mediocrity in a second, but they put the standard as a mediocrity or make it mediocre in general, even though they're not calling it that. And then here you get somebody that's creative that goes outside of that. All of a sudden you make everybody else look bad. They don't like that. They grade everybody on a curve, and that curve is the, being mediocre at best. Sometimes we, as veterans, we break things that work for years. There are times where you have some element of structure and then they go in there and they destroy it because it didn't work at high speeds because most people go slow and they don't do things, you know, in a timely, efficient manner. They usually just have an open door and they just kind of work on it. It's called busy work, right? But there are times, though, like if you can imagine that, you know, if all your employees never did the speed limit, you would never know there's rocks on the ground. But you get a veteran and they slam on that gas and they actually break the speed limit, because some of us just kind of go against the grain. all of a sudden you realize there's a bunch of rocks flinging up, right, because the tires are going too fast. And that's happened to me personally in the work environment. Veterans need some type of structure. They can't just have this open chaos because they drive off of order and discipline. But at the same time, many of them don't like being told what to do. They'll say, we already did that. We don't want that anymore. So definitely give veterans some freedom within the box that you provide. Maybe provide some structure, some guidance with this. But it's definitely something to think about. But let them have some freedom with it, too. And this is probably very similar to any standard employee, too. Veterans are great in the workplace and even in leadership. I can't speak specifically to boots on the ground. I've only read about it, but in my situation, like in a life-changing, altering event type scenario is, you know, my situation, and we were in the middle of a combat zone and we had 7 out of 8 airplanes down and things were heating up and we could not figure out what was wrong. We were working night and day on this thing. We had experts from other jobs to come over and try to brainstorm ideas. The fleet admiral had our names on his desk for sure. I still don't know who the admiral was, but I just know that they knew us on a first name basis. We worked hard, we did our job, and we didn't give up. We did everything to actually produce the result. It just took us a little more time. And essentially, we overcome adversity because there was definitely something wrong with these boxes and we could not figure it out. Granted, this was in the late 90s, early 2000s, and this airplane and the testing equipment was built in the 50s, if that can give you any type of timeline. And so there was a lot of issues that came as a result of that. Many of the veterans have overcome some type of adversity, and employers want this intuition to forge ahead in business. Many veterans can lead you there. You just have to give them some freedom with it, give them some structure and some type of roadmap to get there. And some listening to this might say, why are you talking about all this? You know, we catered a lot of employers and businesses on this podcast, but you know, part of it is, you know, to give you an idea of what veterans could be like in the workplace. But I'm going to tie it back to benefits here in a second, and because I think it's very relevant. So as I mentioned before, the world we work in a normal setting is, at least compared to a military's vision, is that it's very mediocre. They have low expectations. We can complain a lot about it, but we never do anything, right? We really do complain, yet no results. But in the military, we expect results. We expect outcomes. We expect changes. That's who we are. When it comes to the benefits world, we operate the same way as the rest of the world, right? We complain about the mediocrity. We don't do enough about it. We complain and whine, thinking that healthcare is just going to drop. And even though we're 1 year older, we're higher risk to the insurance company, but we still complain about it, right? No one actually throws a map on the table and says, how do we get our troops from A to B in no short order, right? How do we develop a plan, a strategy, a playbook that actually allows us to maneuver and execute whatever mission that we're at, we're working on? There are no excuses when it comes to that, right? We never do that, right? Sometimes we meet with prospects and clients and they complain about another 10% increase, right? Which I totally get. I'm not saying that it's not justifiable to complain. It's more money going out. You have to justify it with new sales, or maybe possibly cut other areas to offset it, even though we're all a higher risk and people are making claims. But we're never willing to change any of our habits to produce different results. And we fight with this all the time. We show different results, higher expectations, and we basically paint out that roadmap from A to B. But then we'll hear, oh, but it doesn't have that fancy purple logo on the card, right? Like whatever it might be. And I tell you, then all of a sudden we're back to mediocrity again, right? They don't push beyond that and say, how do we get from A to B? Like seriously, like I'm tired of this. I'm aggravated. Every renewal, I feel like it's just a complete annoyance. Like all the flies and gnats when you're outside at a picnic and you're trying to eat your lunch and they're all flying around your head, right? That's what this really comes down to. And when you actually have the intuition to say, how do I get from A to B and not deal with this anymore? And no one's doing that in most settings. We never change our habits to produce different results or even the results that we're expecting on that renewal. We never put that map out and try to draw the line and say, okay, how do we get there? And even if a broker such as ourselves come in with a second opinion, we draw that out for them. I'm telling you, either HR, CFO, the owner, they have blinders on. They don't want to see it. They don't want to know about it. They just say, why can't I just do the same thing I'm doing and get to where I want to go? It's not going to happen. Brokers need to bring that a roadmap. So the brokers that are listening to this, build your roadmap, put it together, and stop the mediocrity that's going on. We'll never change the results unless we change that mediocrity. We got to stop settling because change is hard, right? So we settle on the 10% renewal. And in some cases, you can't do it, but that's what the map is for. So employers need to demand it more and pull it out. And obviously, we talk about this on other podcasts, but you get your map through a playbook, right? So you could go to elitebenefits.net/playbook and start the process for that. And one last thing about veterans, we thank veterans all the time. We need to do something better. I hear all the time, thank you for your service, right? It just becomes a redundant, feel like very casual thing to say. I'm not saying it's negative. I'm just saying it's becoming a lot more normal, especially since 9/11. Dan Crenshaw, U.S. Congressman, he had put out one time about changing it up and just saying we'll never forget, because sometimes people will forget the tragedies that veterans had to go through when they were in active duty. Even if you just say it's a true honor, right, and just leave it at that, and that changes it, and it'll be a little bit more memorable because most of the time we hear just thank you, right? Also, if you know any veterans, so as I was typing this, putting together notes, it occurred to me that I know a friend of mine, a fellow veteran himself, Pat Moore, we're going to get him on this podcast at some point. He's just always busy. He recently had a friend that decided to end the battle in his head. It was quite heartbreaking, even for him. It was a close friend to him. And obviously, we need to help more of these people. So watch for personality changes. The war never ends. It's always something they have to deal with. So always keep a lookout for it.